All right, we are here. And the first thing we're going to do is give you the steps, just kind of list them. We're not going to explain them anymore, but we'll just list them. Step one, find the limitation you wish to lift, clear, remove. And that's the limiting belief level one, the social level. Number two, figure out the limiting belief that would best fit this scenario or chronic limiting situation. So again, that's the belief on level one. And number three, make a sentence with this limiting belief and what it keeps you from. The limiting belief of such and such, it keeps me or holds me back from experiencing what I want. Okay, so figure out that one. Number four, identify the level two, the core belief that lies underneath this belief. Number five, look at how belief at the level one, the limiting belief at level one, and the core belief at level two, how they play out at level three and four. I'll see if there's any more bottom lines you can find, or get this clarifies it. Look at your family, look at if you know other lifetimes, bring that in. So write down the ultimate bottom line you've figured out, that is the number two, is the core belief, plus the optimal positive belief for the level one or social belief that you want to change. And all right, and so number six is recognize and acknowledge both negative and positive beliefs. Look at the impact of the negative belief, see the restrictions, see what your life has been, see what it will be. Positive, look at the positive, how it could have impacted your life, how it will impact your life. Number seven, replace the limiting belief sentence with a positive belief sentence. In other words, figure out your specific positive statement, which will sound a lot like an affirmation. Number eight is to look at your destiny, and this is a deeper level. Your destiny, what would your destiny be like if you had chosen the positive belief and level one and two? And the collective, what would your life be if positive belief one and two had been through generations of your family, and what your world would look like if it had? And then step nine is to, once you do, well, actually step nine is going to be doing the ritual. And then step 10 is going to be reinforce the positive belief every day by monitoring your mind talk and then making choices, which is the way you can choose. If you just want to work with level one belief, that's what you do. All right? Okay. So with that done, then let us begin looking, talking to you with who has questions. We'll be happy to answer.
Okay. So so far we only have one question, and it's from Steve.
All right.
I seem to have a lot of trouble building my reputation in my profession as an actor. It seems almost like a good reputation, which would result in success, is worse than a bad one, despite some success. The reputation thing, what beliefs have created it, and how do I change it?
All right, well, it does require a little bit of imagination for you to figure out your level one. Evidently, you feel that you have to have a certain kind of reputation to get success. So define that reputation. So some of it is like a bad reputation gets you more notoriety. Perhaps that leads to more success. to in your mind then a good reputation, like you do a really good job acting and so on like that, that doesn't seem to lead to success. Just somehow or another, you have to be a bad boy to get there. So what you want to do is to look at what type of reputation, what type of image do you think it is that's required to be a success? Because you have in the past thought, okay, if I do a good job as an actor, I'm really a good actor, then I should be successful. And then you're finding, well, maybe that doesn't work. Okay, maybe you want to change that belief. But then you have this other belief as you say, well, you know, if you're kind of a naughty boy and you have a bad reputation, that seems to lead to more success. Now you've got two conflicting social beliefs here, two conflicting level ones. All right, so what can you find as a common denominator between these two? Because otherwise you're going to be stuck between a rock and a hard place, and no matter what you do or how you proceed, you're not going to get anywhere. Because you've got yourself, if you're a bad actor, but you act out or do something else to create notoriety, you can be successful. We sense that, Steve, that you don't really want to go that path. You don't feel that path is really aligned to you. You feel, in a sense, that you want to be this good actor that everybody says, wow, he really does a great job. So what you want to do is find out, well, what is it really? What is it really that you think that Hollywood and media and movies and whatever that the whole industry looks for? What does it look for you to be successful? It may not be reputation. Okay, have you considered that? You may be thinking it's reputation because that may be a belief that comes from your family, is that if you are noble and you do it right and so on, that this is a good reputation, it shows your integrity, and then you are rewarded. But that may be the belief you want to change. You know, but it's not that I've got to be a bad boy. The thing is that you don't even have to go in that direction, perhaps. Maybe you just want to say, you know, I am who I am, and I do my acting, and I love my acting, and I get success. Maybe you have a belief about what it takes to break through, and if so, then you need to figure that out. That might take some thinking on your part. What do you think it takes to be successful? Does it take acting out and being kind of a wild and woolly media star? Do you feel that you can never be that? Is there resentment that seems to be what's required and that you'll never get there because you cannot be this person that you're not? You see, that all of that basically will lead you down to your core belief, is that somehow or another, you're just not right for the part. You know, it's like you can't be cast in the role of great actor if somehow or another, if you just can't play the part. So you want to make sure that the part that you need to play in order to get the accolades, in order to get the jobs and the career going that you want, is something that is in alignment with who you are. So right now you think about maybe that me being me doing what I love, maybe doing what you love the way you love to do it doesn't give you success. Okay, is that a personal failure? Or is that a social thing that you think that you've got to do? Play around with that. Maybe it's maybe you say that what gets a success, I just say it somehow like this, you know, what gets success in Hollywood is, and write down what it is. What you think that they are what do you think a person to break through and to become famous and get good roles and all the wonderful trappings of success that an actor would have, what is required? You have a belief about that. And you're realizing that the belief that you had originally had, that being a really good actor would do it, doesn't cut the mustard. So find out what that belief is. We can't put the words in your mouth because they're your words. They're going to be the way you think, the way what you believe is true about it. We can't find your beliefs for you. We can't do that. It's just not feasible. But you can. What is required to be successful? And when you find that, you'll realize that you believe that this is your limiting belief, that this is required to be successful, and I can't do that. And then you go to level two because I'm not able to do it because I can't act that. I can't, whatever that is. Maybe you'll find yourself like, no, I'm just not capable. I'm not capable of being this type of personality. Maybe that takes you down even deeper in a sense where you were a child, you wanted to please, and you had to try and be somebody you weren't. Did your parents have to do that? Is that what's required? Do you feel that's what's necessary? And if you have to be somebody you aren't, what does that say about you? That you're not enough. You're not good enough. You're flawed somehow. You're defective. You can't do it. You get down into those core and you feel the pain of the rejection. You feel the pain of the failure. Are you a failure? Are you just a loser? You have to go down and find what that is, all right? And then when you kind of get that, oh, okay, then you can start making a statement that this belief that I hold is keeping me from success as an actor because I'm holding this belief I've got to be like this and I can't be like this in order to be an actor. And I resent trying to be that because somewhere underneath it, I believe I must be somebody I'm not in order to succeed. Okay, and that's still a social level belief, level one. Then you go underneath of that, and then because I'm not able to do that, I somehow or another, my personality, my temperament, is not appreciated because somehow or another, I'm just not good enough. And then you find your level two. Then you can work your way back up. All right, so that's what we would suggest. But the words that you have to find are yours. We cannot find your beliefs for you. But the idea of the reputation and perhaps the anger or resentment that you might feel about that, the sadness, the worry that may come with that, whole thing about playing the game, that you can't play the game, right, or whatever it is, all that needs to be looked at so that whatever belief statement that you make about the limiting belief holds that whole energy of that, oh, I have to be something that I don't want to be in order to get what I want. And then you get down to the bottom line of it and then you can find your words for it. Okay? Thank you.
So Helen says, when I do belief changes, sometimes I go into my cave where I have core beliefs and change them. For really embedded beliefs, I will go from that room to my unconscious realm and break the belief there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't work changing a belief in the unconscious realm. So what do I do then?
Well, we would suggest, Helen, that you try doing the meditation we're going to take you on and see how that works. Okay? Because changing it in the unconscious realm should work, but you may not have got all the pieces. And so when you go through the meditation with us, we're going to put all the pieces in. We're actually going to go down in there. And you're going to see we're going to down in the unconscious as well. But there's several layers and there are several steps that maybe will give you a tip as to what you've been missing. Okay?
And Steve says, that was great.
Okay, great, Steve. That's terrific.
Now from Susan.
Okay.
My belief from a young age is I am not good enough. It came from my overly critical, neglecting mother and my father, who constantly used alcohol to escape and cope with reality. Plus, I got bullied in school for almost 10 years. That affects my spiritual business. How can I change?
Okay, and what's your spiritual business? So if you could write out what that means.
She's a healer.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, well, you know, when you do healing, dear one, healing is the essential act of healing is raising the frequency of the person you're working with. You raise their frequency, you lift it up, you put the energy up there and pull a person up to a higher frequency. And if you can get the frequency higher than the condition, the limitation they're feeling, you basically heal it. That's what we're talking about today with beliefs. If you can get the positive belief and you can get the energy up high enough, then the negative limitations just kind of drop away. So evidently in your circumstance, the not good enough is that you're never good enough, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, no matter how many times you repeat it, no matter what, that you just are not good enough. It's just never enough. You are not enough, okay? So when you have a not enough core belief, then what it means is that you will engage the slave driver, the inner slave driver. And when you engage the inner slave driver, you have to motivate yourself through fear or guilt, all right? Now, when you do that, you're basically covering up the pain of the feeling not good enough by being due diligence, by working, by focusing, by doing and achieving. So you kind of, so in your healing practice, if you don't clear this not enough core belief, then what you're going to find is that the slave driver is going to drive you for your business. And when the slave driver drives you from your business, it means that your results, that the success that you get, you will tend to give to your ego. You won't even be aware of it, in a sense. You'll give it to your ego because the ego facade is that you're a healer and that you're enough. And so you're trying to prove that. Okay, so yes, if that's a core belief that you're never enough no matter what, then you use that and you heal that in the meditation that we're going to follow this Q&A with, all right? But be aware that for you to be successful, then you've got to have this whole thing that on your social level, on level one, what is the belief that you need to somehow or another, do you have to convince people that you're good enough? Do you have to be highly motivated and work really hard? That's a slave driver. Do you have to be noble, really, you know, focus on and do it right? Right? What does that not enough imply as far as the belief on the surface of why you don't have as much business as you would like? Okay? So you want to, because you want to have both layers. You can go down and get the I'm not enough, and if I were enough, then I would have good business. But it doesn't translate that way. If you are enough, you're valuable enough, worthy enough, and so on, then what would that change in your behavior, in your presence, in your actions as a healer? And that way you get to your positive level one belief. But you want to have the negative level one belief, and you want to have a corollary positive level one belief. Okay? So if you know your core belief, then you have to go up above the core belief and find what is the level one, because that's what's in your actions, that's what's in your behavior, that's what how you show yourself in a sense is there. And that's the mechanisms of society and interaction, and that's where marketing and selling are, is all level one. You see, of course, if you don't feel that you're worthy, level one's not going to work either. But you do need to find what vehicle or what boundary in level one you think is important in this. So that's why we would suggest, if you start with the not enough, you've got to go up and find out, well, how does that apply? How does that apply? How does that work in your healing business? Is it because they don't see you as being capable? Do you have to try too hard? Do you have to give, do you feel unworthy, so, or low of value? So do you have to give them deep, deep discounts? Do you think that if you discount yourself extremely, that'll bring some people in? What approach are you taking? So that'll give you your idea of what you believe is needed to be done on level one. Okay, and once you get that level, once you get level one and you get level two, then the rest of it can come pretty quickly, because then you can look at level three. My family, you know, is nobody feels good enough in my family. They're all dysfunctional and suffering and in pain and so on. And here you are, this healer person who had to grow up in this family, and in a sense, to see all this dysfunction enabled you to see your path to healing. And although that's a very unpleasant way to find it, it really did leverage you out, because you had to start healing yourself. You had to start lifting yourself out of it. But there's certain strategies that you have used and certain strategies that you think should work in bringing your clients. So just check out that and make sure that you've got, you've got level three, you understand level three, you understand level two, okay? So you got the genetic family thing, you got the core belief thing. You know the emotional patterns of your mother and father. You already know how they're put together psychologically, okay? So you can see that's kind of a foundation. You see that came down through the generations. You see that's part of the culture, and you see it's part of the pain. And you came to experience some pain. You came to see the pain, and it enabled you to get into your healing practice. So you got three and you got two. You've got to find one, level one, the social beliefs that are layered on that. Then you can do the whole flow. Okay? Thank you.
So from Pamela, one of my first past life memories was being burned as a witch. At the tribunal, the entire village was afraid to defend me out of fear, so no one stood up for me. Consequently, I was burned. Came into this belief as a child, believing we are utterly alone when you need help.
Yes.
Well, it kind of just stops there in the middle of the sentence.
Oh, okay.
I guess when you need help, you won't get any.
Yeah, that does come from, that's a level four. Mm-hmm. That definitely does that. That comes from level four. And at the end of that life, the pain that that self felt over being abandoned by her village was so huge. She felt so abandoned, so alone. We would say that probably also distorts level four, level five, rather. There's a view of feeling abandoned by God, and so the whole perspective on the divine is also twisted a bit. So when you forgive yourself, when you release the beliefs, and when you shift and move all of this energy in the meditation, then you have level five, the distortion of level five, that you can release with it. And what you're going to end up with is being able to feel the ability to, better than ever, to connect with the divine, to connect with your guides, to feel the support, and to allow yourself to receive support from not just your unseen friends, but also your seen friends, your network, your physical human being network, rather than having them offer to support you, but then maybe pulls out at the last minute or somehow or another it never works out to where you get the support that you would need. So yes, this is a powerful powerful level one belief. You don't get the support, you're alone, you don't get the support. Level two, what is it that you got about yourself that explained why somehow or another you were not worth defending? Yeah, they were afraid, and they were afraid for their own skins, but you weren't valuable enough. You weren't worthy enough. You weren't worth saving. So go into that level two, into the core belief, and what is that? There was some shame in there. In this lifetime, what is it? What is it that makes you not worthy for support? What makes you always have to be the person to support everybody else rather than be supported? What makes you always having to be on your own and not being able to be really feel a deep sense of belonging and safety? What is it that's going on in this lifetime that's reflecting that? And then what you do is that you look out, you look at what's a core belief that I adopted from that lifetime that I'm using in this lifetime to explain why I'm flawed, why I'm defective, why somehow or another I'm not okay, why I'm not worthy. You see, then you have your core belief. Then you have the top belief that you never can get support, and then you can work. And you got level three. You got level four, and you even can touch on level five. So you can put this together. Boom! You're ready. You're ready to move it through. Then, thank you.
Connie says, how do thresholds of belief fit in?
How do thresholds fit in?
Yeah, thresholds of belief.
Well, we would say that when we're talking about levels, when we're talking about beliefs as a threshold, beliefs, you stand on beliefs. In your energy field, you stand on beliefs. They're your ground, okay? They're also your height. You know, if you were in a six-sided box, it'd be the bottom and the top. So if the top, and you know, you've done the Lazari's success cube, it's like the top is too low. That's often belief because it doesn't give you the quantity of possibility. You know, it's there. So if you want to look at it as a threshold, that's fine. But you can also see it that the core belief can also define a threshold of limitation. And when you get into level three especially, because level three has to do with your body. It has to do with the physical plane, all right? And a lot of thresholds are what your body is capable of. Because the translation of the unconscious, where the thresholds really are in the unconscious, but that translation into the physical plane, into your conscious awareness, it comes through the body. So very often, belief thresholds will show up very strongly in health issues. That's sometimes you can see them more easily there, because what we're working with today, we're not going to be working with the thresholds which enable your body to function better. We will address that in the future. But what we're addressing today is the social belief, that's at that level one belief. That's not a threshold really. That's closer to a pattern. Level two, core belief, now you're starting to get closer to a kind of being able to start moving the threshold, because self-image starts moving threshold, okay? When you start getting a new narrative for yourself, a new future self, that starts moving your thresholds, opening up your thresholds. It's in level three that your thresholds are most apparent, because that's more genetic, because it seems to be more fixed in the physical, in your physical body. So that's to the extent that we would like to discuss thresholds, but it's like a threshold of if you have an allergy to a food, then you don't have a large enough threshold to eat that food and feel safe and free. So any place in your life that you don't feel free, you have a boundary or a limit. And if you expand your self-image, expand your beliefs, do some of these other techniques, do some forgiveness, do some clearing, release trauma out of your body, and so on, you're going to see the thresholds move too. All right. So thank you.
Christy says, I have noticed this brain chatter louder than ever.
Good for you.
I find myself almost in another world with these thoughts, like a foggy world. How do I break myself out of this thought pattern sooner and get back on track? It seems like my ego wants me to stay in this foggy world.
Well, yeah. The foggy world was created as an adjustment. Like we said, that the ego facade is the rationale of you trying to be, you trying not to be the wounded core self, and for you not to let anyone else see the wounded core self. However, the ego is very supportive of you being a victim. And it's very supportive of you martyring and sacrificing yourself to no avail. And so all this yada, 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 yada is definitely, it is part of the ego, but it's also anchored into your subconscious mind, which is repetitive. It keeps repeating the same things. It keeps repeating the same energies. It keeps repeating the same frequencies. And if it's in your subconscious, then you can see it and you can hear it and you can choose something different. So the key here, and that's true, that's what what we need to do is, and what we plan to do is a seminar specifically on mind talk, healing mind talk, because if you were to walk around in the world and you see a whole bunch of people, well, maybe not right now because it's just still shelter in place time when this seminar is going on. But if you were to see people like go at the beach, if you were able to kind of peek into their heads and listen to their mind talk, you'd be horrified, because your foggy mind talk is mild compared to a lot of people's. It's not a good place. It's kind of a mediocre place. You're holding yourself into a mediocre place. It's a place to numb you out, and it's a habit. But because it's subconscious and it's level one, Mind Talk is all on level one. That you can identify it, and when you're in your foggy place, you can say, wait, stop. Stop. Stop it. Stop. Shh, shh, shh. What belief do you hold that you need to keep doing that foggy stuff? What is the belief that's there? What is the self-image that's there? Is it you numbing out from some trauma of the past? So you want to find out why you have it there in the first place, but frankly, you can stop it by becoming aware of it, saying stop, separate yourself from it, and see, oh, there's the mind talk. I can see the mind talk. Here's me, the spiritual being, and there's this chatter, chatter, blah, 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 blah. Ooh, okay, yucky, yucky. Why would I, the spiritual being, want to carry this around with me? Well, maybe what you might want to do is say, okay, if I do the foggy mind talk, then this keeps me from feeling some kind of pain. This keeps me from feeling fear. This keeps me from feeling my rage my futility, whatever it is. So it has a purpose. It has a positive purpose originally. And if you can discern what that is, then you can, as a spiritual being, recognize that there's some wounded self that chose that as a way to not feel the pain of the wound. And if you go into the wounded self, you'll find your core belief, your limiting core belief that came from society shaming you, from the rejections of others. And also, it could be from your parents, but it's not in your DNA, it's social. It's the social shame. Now, your DNA, like you're born a woman, a lot of times women are in shame at birth because they have the shame of being, and you do not have a penis, shame on you. Okay? That takes a lot of overcoming. But it may not be level three, it may be level two, that somehow or another you're just not okay. That you're never going to succeed because you're just a loser. You just can't ever get your act together because you're a ditz. And you're a ditz because you just, you know, you're damaged goods. You're just been thrown away. God's mistake or whatever it is. But find what that pain is that is in your core, that's covering your light. And if you can do that, find that, then when you hear the foggy mind talk, if you can change that core belief, then you can step into the light, step into your power, step into your beauty and your love and your freedom and your expansionness and your presence. And you can look at that foggy mind talk and say, okay, I don't have any purpose anymore to do that. I don't have a need for that anymore. It's not serving any useful purpose. So I hereby choose not to have that. I hereby choose to listen to the mind talk and hear what it says. And out of it, I can discern where I have limiting beliefs, where I am holding myself back, where I'm trying to numb myself out, where I'm trying to rationalize and analyze stuff to make sense of it, that is really, it makes no sense at all, that I just need to choose. You see, and then you can, then you have a little bit of power there. And it's not just kind of droning on and sucking your life force with it. Instead, you're separate to it. The key is separation. Because when you can separate yourself, you're in your power. This is your point of power. It's a point of choice. You can make choice. And so when you change a belief, and when you do these beliefs, it's generally useful to every day to affirm your new belief, step into it, really feel it, own it, and own the future that it is helping to create, or the future that it is connected to, the grander, brighter more loving and free future, right? So when you do that, and you can do that instead of just numbly just kind of going along with the mind talk, then you're going to be able to make a really good shifts and really good openings. However, it's going to be scary because the mind talk has a lot of limiting beliefs in it. If anything happens, if any emotion happens, if anything disappointing or anything upsetting or anything changes or shifts, you're going to try to rationalize it. You're going to try to analyze what it means. And when you put a meaning onto something, very often you create a belief for it. You utilize a belief you already have, perhaps, and reinforce it, or you create a new assumption or projection or idea for that occasion, which can become then a limiting belief for you. So your mind talk, you don't want to get rid of it, and it won't happen anytime soon. What you will end up doing is utilizing your mind talk to find your net limiting beliefs. And then you do belief changes. Okay, then after a while, when those limiting beliefs start showing up automatically, you can say, stop, I already changed you. No, I've decided to believe this instead. And you just shift it. It takes 5 seconds. After a while, the limiting belief won't show up anymore. Okay, and you'll have positive mind talk, but it takes a long time, in a sense, of development, of evolution, for you to get to the place where you don't have any mind talk anymore, really. Because the mind talk has different levels. We're not going to get into that. But what you want to pay attention to now that you're conscious of it and it's very loud, it's like this is your point of evolution where it's time for you to take those limiting beliefs there or the strategies, the limiting strategies that are in there, and deliberately write them down. You can get a notepad, and when you hear these, write this down. And it'll be judgments of yourself, judgments of others, and that assumptions, projections, limiting beliefs about the world, about reality, about people, about da da da. Just keep writing it down, and maybe even take a notebook around with you for a few days and just listen to your beliefs. And when you watch TV and or watch the news, oh gosh, I have to write down some more limiting beliefs, more projections I make, more assumptions I make about people, and so on. And you just keep writing them down, and you'll find that this all of this was given to you or you created as a way to distract you, to cover you up from having to face something more painful. But when you get down to the core belief, you'll find out what that is. You can change that. And so then it becomes much easier to clear out mind talk beliefs that you find. Eventually, you'll have days that go by and you don't have any foggy. No foggy mind talk. None. Zip. Nada. What you'll find instead is that you'll have a commentary about, okay, here's how I feel. The temperature is like this. Oh, what a pretty day. Look at the bird there on the branch. You know, it'll just be stuff like that. Or sometimes it'll be, wow, I feel so free today. I feel, whatever. You'll find positive things going on. And then from there, you can take it into higher frequencies to where you just are. You don't have to make commentaries. You just know. But most people are not there. Very few people in the world actually can stay there. Okay, so, but that's what we would suggest that you do with your mind talk. And then in the future, when we give the seminar on it, please take that, and you can get down, and we'll get down the layers and really show you how to clean it out. Okay, thank you.
So Martina says, I believe this world is toxic. So did I contribute to the creation of the coronavirus?
In a whole creative sense. Now, it's a collective. And yes, this collective is specific for you. And everyone who's listening right now is probably in a reality in which there also exists a coronavirus epidemic or pandemic. So yes, you all created that, but you don't know how you created it. So you're at a stage in where you allow it. You allow it because the universe is still giving you your playground, is still giving you a world to play with, to learn about, and so on. You're not at the God level yet in which you can say, okay, I'm going to have people be healthy. I'm going to have people be aware and no longer pollute the planet. At some point you'll be where, okay, people, hey, there, it looks like there's a problem there. We'll find solutions. Somebody find solutions for that. I'm going to dream and imagine that somebody finds a solution for that. And then it happens. Now, you're getting there, but you're slogged down in the victim place. Whereas the world is toxic, you're at the mercy of it. You're at the mercy of your environment. So the toxicity is like a burden. It's like it's hovering over you. It's like a vulture waiting for you to die and it'll pounce, you know, or something. So what you want to do is get clear on that, get rid of that. You may look at a belief that you are vulnerable to toxins, that you're vulnerable to the coronavirus, that it could get you, and it could be a bad thing, and so on. You have some kind of expectation even about that. The channel was noticing the other day, told Daniel about it, that it's like, okay, I'm so tired of this. I'm so restless. I'm getting kind of stir crazy about all this shelter in place thing. And so, well, maybe just should go ahead and get this coronavirus and be done with it, right? What is your response? How are you responding? We would not suggest that at this time for you to basically claim that you created it, but we would say that for you to recognize that this is a reality you chose to experience. And because of that, you chose to experience this. Now see what you can do with healing it, with clearing it out in yourself, so that you don't have fear, so that you know what you want to do, so you're empowered, you're a free person, and life is good regardless of what's going on out there. And then also, of course, then dream. What do you want in the world? Like what we were talking about in the belief change process is like you go and look at, what's this positive belief you want to hold instead? And what's the positive reality that's going to come because of that belief that will reflect that belief? And then what will that positive reality, personal reality, how if that were all over the world, how would the world reflect that? Then dream that. Then imagine that. Then start looking at your future self and meeting with your future self and saying, okay, what world are we in? We're in this world where people are finding the answers to all of these old problems. We're in the world where there are no longer any problems, where there's no longer anything to fear, where there's lots of love and belonging and happiness and creativity and joy. Okay. Maybe that's an impossible world. But if you dream it, if you imagine it, if you feel it, if you choose it, then what direction are you going to go in? All right. So you're going to leave the coronavirus world and all the downsides of that and shifting and make it through this period and get into a world where people wake up and people do good things, better things happen, and they're moving towards this future that you choose. That's why we also did a whole seminar on the future, on working with future self and putting your future putting the new future in place. And right now, at this particular juncture, it's a time to be imagining. Nothing can happen unless you're imagining. So, all right, if you want to work with this on a belief change level, do you think that you are capable of changing the world? No, I'm too small, too insignificant. Okay, maybe that is a core belief. Maybe you look at your own personal life and feel that you maybe sometimes feel too insignificant, that you can't make a big difference there, you know? And find the level one social beliefs that would reinforce that. And then change them. Right? So, because you probably already know what's entrenched in your genetic line. You may already know of other lifetimes that you've had and so on. And you may already have looked at the whole belief about being abandoned by the divine and instead choosing that, yes, I am divine by my nature, and I choose to open up to receive the support and love of the divine in my life. So you can play around with beliefs on this, but don't expect that you're going to, because of time, it takes time on the world level. It is slow on the world level. It's just part of physical plane unfoldment. In your personal life, it still happens sometimes slower than you want, but it's faster. So work there. Work in your personal life. Take responsibility for that and change your beliefs for your personal life. Expand out to your community and then into the world. And then into the future of the world. And you've got plenty of good material going on. It's pretty chaotic out there. There's lots of stuff to play around with and lots of stuff to imagine. So. Good luck with that.
So one of the two Davids that is participating says, I've been a musician and teacher for 40 years. Nerves are still getting to me. I'm a degreed piano player, but nerves and distracting thoughts still come, and I make mistakes with pieces I've played since I was young. I've done tons of work on this to correct it. But no luck.
All right. So, the level one social belief there is going to have something to do with that when I'm visible, people judge me and I'll make mistakes. This is of course adolescent. Child adolescent, because if you feel pressured that you're making mistakes is going to be a horrible failure on your part, or that people are going to judge you and reject you, well, then it's awfully important. You've got too much charge on it. And in any time you're trying to manifest a good reality, you cannot have a lot of charge on it, because if to have that reality is more important and more meaningful to who you are than it really, really is, then you're going to flub up. You're going to fail because it creates anxiety. And anxiety means that you basically expect you're going to boo-boo, you're going to make a mess of it, it's going to, and you just can't do whatever you need to do. You're going to shoot yourself in the foot somehow. Now, on a belief level, you want to find what's the level one belief about that? Is that people going to judge you? If people judge you, what does that mean about your life? And what does that mean about you? If people judge you, you'll never be successful. If you make a mistake, you'll never succeed. You know, that's an awful lot of pressure. And that's why you have your nerves. But it's not who you are now that is the one having the nerves. We would say it's a younger you, a child or adolescent you, who has the nerves, because he's the one that felt most keenly the pain and fear and trauma of potentially being rejected, you know, socially rejected. Rejection in adolescence is like death, right? And And in young adulthood, it's like ego mortification. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm so humiliated. I cannot be successful. I'm a failure, right? This is a lot of load. So you want to like find out what is the belief statement that would refer to the reason you make mistakes and the reason that you make mistakes and therefore fail, you know, is because who are you? What's wrong with you? Now, you know there's nothing wrong with you. You've done enough personal work. You know that. But there's the you that is still holding that core belief of I just can't cut it. I just can't, you know, I mean, it's too much pressure. I just can't do it. It's just too much pressure. I cannot succeed. It's just too much. I cannot even go there. It's too much visibility. It's too much pressure. See, just think, what if you were to have a concert and all these people, hundreds of people show up, and there you are playing a piece. And what if you play it perfectly? Oh my, scintillingly, brilliantly, phenomenally, wow, wow. And then you stand up and you take your bow and people, yay, and they're standing up and cheering, bravo, and bravo. What if that happens? What would that mean for your future? How much more pressure would you have for the next concert? And then the next concert. You know, this type of success pressure shows up a lot with people who, you know, rock bands are notable examples, that they'll have this like major hit album and they become the fabulous stars. And then the second album is, well, okay, they're good. The fans still like, okay, but it's not that good. And this third album, okay, all right. But where's that scintillating success? And sometimes the band's broken up already. That they squabble amongst themselves. They spend all their money, all this great money that they make, and they just go the different directions all in a huff. And why? Because the pressure is just too much. The pressure to keep going, to keep succeeding at that level, and that their self-image isn't expanded enough. So we would suggest, David, that there's a couple of things here. One is that when you perform, you go back into your adolescent self. And so before you go to a concert, you need to talk with your adolescent self and say, look, no big deal. You know, just go off and play the piece. Nobody's listening. Have fun. Go have a fun time. I'll take care of it. I'm the adult. I'll take care of it. And then you look out playing as being something that's fun. And even if you make mistakes, so what? Whoever is listening wants you to succeed. So you don't think so, because your adolescent thinks everybody's there waiting to judge you. Oh, he missed that phrasing. You know, that note went sour. Oh, gosh, just at that point. And all that. So this is the young adult, adolescent, trying to be perfect, thinking if you're perfect, you'll succeed. People will love you. Everything will be great. But it won't, because there's no perfect. But frankly, if you make a mistake, people are going to say, wow, you know, I want him to succeed and make a mistake. Oh, please, please. Okay, please don't make any more. I'm with you. I'm with you. Do you know that your audience does that? Okay, so your belief you need to change has to do with perfection, and you need to get your adolescent out of the way so that your adult can hold and sustain that you're playing for the fun and the joy and not for approval. And once you kind of take the pressure off of yourself, you'll find that it's fun. They interviewed, a very successful tennis player, now we've forgotten her name, but I think it's Serena. And she goes out and she's got the total heebie-jeebies at the beginning of the game. But when she gets into the game, she starts getting into the flow. And then she starts having fun. And she just loves what she's doing. And she's just having so much fun. And then she's really good. Now, there's some games that are off. She doesn't win. But ultimately, she knows she's playing for the joy of it. She's not playing for the money or the approval anymore. She's past that. She's playing because of the joy. And it's something she's got to do. She feels absolutely, she has to do it. It's like a huge passion. She's got to do it. So think of it, you know, this music is your passion. Play it as your passion. Play it in joy and celebration. Bring your soul in, and you and their soul and spirit have a good time playing. And really, the term for producing music is called playing. So we suggest that you put it in the category of play and not achievement. Okay? So that's two things, at least we would suggest. Now, you can change some beliefs on here, but the belief about needing to be perfect in order to be successful or to be loved or to be approved of is definitely a social belief you need to do. You need to change at some point. All right? Thank you for that one. And maybe one more?
Yes, and that's from the other David, who says, Galexis, would you talk a bit more about what dream the deeper levels means?
All right. Well, by dreaming the deeper levels means that you just kind of go and let your intuition, let your sensing, let your greater self, let your expanded self sense. And it also means that when you dream the deeper level, you're connecting with destiny. That is a deeper, broader, bigger level, okay? And then when you deal with the collective and how your destiny intertwines with the collective, with the whole reality, that's huge, all right? And when you dream, you're imagining, you're intuiting, you're stretching, you're creating, okay? So when you're sensing destiny, what is your destiny? Sense, intuit. Be in your expanded self. Maybe expand your self-image and now sense destiny. Let me just feel it. Not necessarily think of it in the form of what to do or steps to take or plan. Okay, let me just think of destiny as far as, yeah, my destination. Destiny is based on the term or the concept of destination. Your destination is home with one with God, Goddess, all that is. That's your destination. Your destiny is the track that takes you there. And your destiny threads its way through your lifetimes. And you see little pieces of it in various lifetimes. In this lifetime, you have a bigger piece of it. And in fact, you may have a destiny in the world in the lifetime. But overall, your destiny is beyond this lifetime. It's beyond all lifetimes. That's your destiny is there. But to align yourself with your destiny is to align yourself with your greatness, with your majesty, with your magnificent self. Not no ego here, but just who you really are, the divine you. And sense, okay, what in your life, the functions of your life, the actions of your life, what is lined up with this sense of destiny, with this direction, with this purpose that you are feeling, right? So that's dreaming it, okay? Then you look at, okay, this positive belief I want to hold, the positive core, the positive level two, and the positive level one, the social belief, okay, I'm going to take those, and now as my destiny self, I'm going to say, well, what if I can dream it for the world? What would the world be like? So you're dreaming the world. You're imagining. You're creating a potential, a vision, an idea for the world. And as such, that gifts the world something of you, of your spark. All right, so that's what that's about. And thank you for that. And thank all of you for your questions. Very interesting, intriguing questions. You're all doing such good work and really willing to do some of this core exploration, shifting and changing, tweaking, manifesting and creating. So we applaud you.